public comments?
Saundra's here too.
There is no public comment at this time.
Okay.
She is. Okay.
Okay, approval of minutes. Any discussion on the minutes from the March 11th, 2020 Campo meeting? Any corrections?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization for March 11th, 2020 as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Public meeting item 6A for possible action. Discussion of possible action regarding a formal amendment to campus federal fiscal year FFY 2018-2021 transportation permit program to add two projects. Dirk.
Thank you. So the formal TIP amendment will program two funding sources commonly used for jump around Carson's bus services.
This is Chaz. I'm sorry to butt in here, but Greg is muted, and so is, we can't hear you if we're online.
Testing.
I have my mic on, Chaz. Can't hear me? Chaz?
Maybe they, yeah.
Chaz, anybody else? Can anybody else hear me? Saundra?
I can hear you. This is Bob Hastings. I can hear you on the phone.
Now we can't.
Yes, you can hear you now.
They can hear you.
Okay. Jazz, can you still not hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. I guess I have to eat the mic. How's that? Okay, so Dirk, go ahead.
Continue.
Thank you.
So item 6A, again, Dirk Waring for the record. This item is for a formal TIP amendment. It's going to program two funding sources, which we'll be using for Jump Around Carson's bus services. A formal TIP amendment is required if you're adding a project or if you're making a significant change to the scope or cost of an existing project. So the two projects being added, the first project involves FTA, Federal Fiscal Year 2020-5307 apportionment funding for Jump Around Carson's operating, preventative maintenance, and capital projects. The total amount being programmed is about $2.3 million. The local match required is $998,000, which is about 43% local match. The second project involves FTA Federal Fiscal Year 2019-5310 apportionment grant funding for capitalized operating. The total amount being programmed is $179,000 with a local match of $35,000, which equates to a 20% local match. That concludes my comments, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I just have one, and maybe not necessarily a question, but more as I tried to track the amendments and the order. So I noticed that in the documentation on the amendments that we're doing, which are fine, it lists the document as 20-09. But I cannot find anything in here that references it as 2009. So I was just wondering if where we put formal on the front cover, you put formal amendment being presented for approval 4-8-2020. Should that be dash 2009 to tie documents in? Or is there another piece that I'm not seeing that shows me? I just can't see each amendment.
No, that makes a lot of sense. The 20-09 is actually, it's a number from NDOT's ESTIP platform, and it's not always, it goes in logical sequence. But we can start putting that as a note on the front page of the TIP, and I think that would be very helpful. So we'll be happy to do that.
Thank you, because I just tried to tie out a couple of things, and when I got all the math to work, though, I couldn't find – I thought, that one was administrative. And so it took me a minute to figure out that it's because some of them you could do administratively. So if you could just tie that out for me on, like you said, we could just add that on this. And then in the future, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, I'll bring that back for public comment. We have no public. Any other discussion? Do I have a motion?
I move to approve the formal amendment as presented.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those?
Aye.
I guess the motion carries. Okay. Okay, item 6B. Discussion and possible action regarding the submittal of a request to the Nevada Department of Transportation, NDOT, to reclassify South Wampa Lane between Fairview Drive and South Edmonds Drive as a minor collector roadway. Again, Dirk.
Thank you, Chair. So yes, the request to reclassify South Wampa Lane is reclassification from a local road to a minor collector roadway. And this is a section of road between Fairview Drive and South Edmonds Drive. Proposals for classifications are typically initiated by the MPO, submitted to the Nevada Department of Transportation, who then does a review and submits a formal application to FHWA. Staff has discussed this reclassification with NDOT, and they are supportive. South Wampa Lane is currently functioning the way we see it as a minor collector roadway, mainly due to its proximity to the I-580 ramps that are accessed via Fairview Drive. And for reference, traffic counts were collected on South Wampa Drive in 2019, and they had a daily volume of about 2,100. And in comparison, we recently reclassified Cochise Street. That had a volume of 1,600, so for comparison. If approved, the reclassification of South Wampa Lane will support future right-of-way dedications and will allow the road to be eligible for certain federal funds. That concludes my comments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
This section of South Wampa Lane has no curb gutter sidewalk. So are there any requirements for improvements by reclassifying the road?
There's no requirement from a functional class. That requirement would more come from the city. And if we wanted to treat that roadway as an urban roadway or keep it as a rural. And that decision doesn't have to be made today, but having that classification come from the FHWA does not dictate that you need curb or gutter.
So can you tell me, is there a norm at which you look on the classification of the road for the average vehicles per day? It might not be an exact science, but is it at 1,500 we begin looking at? What's the threshold that makes you even examine it? So why did this road come to your attention? I guess that's
there's multiple factors, and I can't recite the volume, but there are guidelines, and a lot of the guidelines aren't a perfect match for Carson City just because the functional classification spans all the way up to your big cities like Reno, Chicago, New York. So the volumes don't always match for us. But one thing that we do look at is access. So, for example, the folks using Wampa Lane aren't primarily from the budding land uses. It's being used as a way to convey traffic from one point to another point. And so that's kind of one of the characteristics that we use on whether or not it's appropriate to reclassify from a local to a collector roadway.
If I may, typically about 2,000 ADT will kick into the collector.
Okay.
So
that's what I'm saying. Is there kind of a...
Yeah, it's kind of the rule of thumb, about 2,000.
Then it's not local traffic anymore is what you're saying.
Right.
There's 200 households in the area, so...
It is. It's just a shortcut.
Are there any other questions? All right, call back for public comment. No public comment. Somebody have a question? No? All right, do you have a motion?
I move to approve submitting the reclassification request to the Nevada Department of Transportation as presented.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Motion carries. All right. Item 6C. Presentation and discussion on the development of Campo's 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. Yeah. All right. Again, that's Dirk.
Thank you, Chair. So, staff wanted to have this item just to present kind of the initial start of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization's 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. So what is the Regional Transportation Plan? It's a long-term planning document. It analyzes the regional transportation network. It identifies current and future needs and ensures that the planning process addresses the three C's, which is continuing, cooperative, and comprehensive planning. The plan will analyze the entire Campo area. So this is a map. The red line denotes the Campo boundary. So essentially you have the northern part of Douglas County, you have a western portion of Lyon County, and then you encompass all of Carson City except for the small area that's up by Lake Tahoe, which is under the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's MPO boundary. So the plan must have a minimum of a 20-year horizon. It must forecast demand on the transportation system. And the way that we do this is through use of our travel demand model, which we've already started updating it. So we're updating the residential population as well as employment with the best data that's available. We develop long and short range strategies to improve performance. We evaluate transportation facilities that serve national and regional transportation. We propose improvements with cost estimates, which allows us to develop a financially constrained implementation plan. We discuss environmental mitigation strategies as they are related to transportation impact. And we also plan for multimodal transportation. So this is kind of a graphic of the planning process, but essentially, yeah, you start with your goals and your objectives, which is what we're here to do today. We develop performance measures to help us gauge success. Then moving down on the flow chart, we develop strategies and investment priorities to meet our goals. And moving down to the bottom left-hand corner, we develop an implementation plan with the resources that we have. And then moving to the right bottom-hand corner, we evaluate and monitor the efforts throughout the plan to make sure to see if we need to make changes. So a little background. In 2016, the Campo Board approved the 2040 RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan. The adopted goals for that plan were to increase the safety of the transportation system for all users, to maintain a sustainable regional transportation system, to increase the mobility and reliability of the transportation system for all users, to maintain and develop a multimodal transportation system that supports economic vitality, and to provide an integrated transportation system. The 2040 RTP goals were developed to align with federal transportation goals and to meet local and regional needs. The present time staff is recommending maintaining the same goals for the 2050 RTP, which will align with the federal and state goals. And when I say state goals, I'm referring to NDOT's One Nevada plan. And then also we create consistency between plans, which I think is beneficial. This is an overview of the schedule that staff has laid out. So today, April 8th, is our kickoff meeting to kind of get input on the goals. Then in April and May, we have a short survey that will be coming out soon. We're in the process of development, but the survey is similar to the 2040 RTP survey, and the purpose of this survey is to help identify regional transportation concerns and priorities. June 10th, staff plans to present funding scenarios along with a draft list of projects to the Campo Board and public. And then July 7th, Campo staff plans to present a draft of the 2050 RTP and open up a 30-day public comment period. And then on September 9th, staff plans to present a final draft of the 2050 RTP to the Campo Board. So that concludes my comments for the most part. Staff would like to solicit comments from the board as it relates to the goals or any part of the regional transportation plan. So that concludes my comments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dirk. Any questions?
So one of my questions is when I look at these as just overall goals, it doesn't help me understand the hierarchy of the goal or the hierarchy of the system in general. So some of the questions that I get a lot of times from the public is how did you determine it's why would you shrink the road is a great example. And I say, well, because of traffic counts and because we want to be more safe for the pedestrians. But they say, I don't understand. The traffic flow is immensely inhibited by this. So how do we, in the plan, make a decision on what the hierarchy is? Should it be moving traffic or creating a multimodal? How do you weigh the two, or do we weight them in the plan at all?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and it's a hard question, because a lot of times it's a balancing act. If we wanted to maximize capacity, we would have ways of doing that. If you wanted to maximize safety, we would have ways of doing that, and sometimes those ways conflict. And so by having, a list of goals that address different facets of the transportation network, I think it forces staff to continually try and find that balance, which is sometimes hard to find. So, as you know, as we go move forward with the list of projects, one of the things that we will be doing and presenting to you is how we rank these projects. And the way that we will be ranking projects will be along the lines of these goals, whether they be safety or efficiency or mobility.
If I can, I can dive in just a little bit deeper. So I can look at a road and say that is our most highly traffic corridor in Carson City, right? We might say coming from Dayton to Carson City is by far the most traffic flow that we have. So would we say in that case that traffic flow takes precedence because it's so heavy? I wouldn't necessarily look to one of these other goals because moving the traffic would override, because it has a trip meter, right? It says that 25,000 vehicles, we need to make this our priority. I guess that's what I was kind of looking for, is a comment that we recognize that not all roads are necessarily, am I going to recommend that pedestrians walk across this intersection that's so heavily trafficked, and that's what I'm really after.
No, I hear your comment, and one thing that we did address in the 2040 RTP as it relates to complete streets, and I think what you're getting at is that all streets aren't intended or should be complete streets. And one of the ways that we handled that in the 2040 RTP was to say, hey, complete street is kind of a toolbox of treatments, and all of them might not be appropriate for all roads, and so I don't have a perfect answer, but I can definitely take that, your comments, and feed them into the plan.
Thank you very much. I just think it's important when we're speaking out with the public that they understand their feedback and comments on these is important. Is there certain roads you think we should add a complete street to? Is there certain roads you think we shouldn't, instead of it just being a big toolbox that we're really moving to the most appropriate use, and maybe it is road by road, but it's just a discussion point that I think the public doesn't understand, that many of these decisions really in what we're doing, even though this board or another board might be deciding today on a contract, the actual decision was made 10 years ago on what was going to happen with a road, that the planning is a long time. It's not something that happens when the contract is before us. And I think that it's a very difficult task for the public to understand that it's really years and years of planning before you're executing something on a major roadway. So anything we can do to help them know that, again, this is the plan for 2050, so what's the horizon and where are we going for our future? So thank you.
If I may just provide an additional comment. The goal for economic vitality, we've heard a lot about that in the transportation world related to, some people ask, well, what does transportation relate to economic vitality? And a lot of that has to do with access improvements. And there's a lot of research that's been done that says if you improve access, not just for cars, but for all modes, you increase the variety of trips that are taken. You provide opportunity for new trips, for new stop-by trips where people may otherwise have driven through the corridor without even stopping to look or stopping to explore. And so having that economic vitality goal in there sort of provides an opportunity to help us step back and take another look and say, what is the goal for this specific corridor, and helps those local jurisdictions make those priorities.
Brett?
Dirk, we're now extending the plan out by an additional 10 years. So should we be looking at details like the makeup of the cars that will be on the road, the size of the cars, and by that I mean, do we look at things like economic factors like the price of fuel, and is that going to drive the size of cars back to smaller cars and the makeup of the cars more towards electric rather than gas? Are those the kind of details that we should be looking at and incorporating into the plan? And is this plan from the 30,000-foot view or the 10,000-foot view, or are we down in the weeds on this plan?
So first of all, on funding, staff will be providing more details on the funding. But as you mentioned, it's a long-term horizon, right? So as we all know, the economy is cyclical, and so we try and figure out try and be conservative. CAMPO, along with MPO and the Washoe RTC, the Southern RTC, TRPA, and the Nevada Department of Transportation, we are all working together, and we're trying to make it sure that we have the same inflation rate and same revenue, and so that we always are kind of have some similarities. We will dive into that. One of the things that we've been talking about at the staff level is to provide multiple different scenarios, especially with the COVID-19. We might see there might be a impact to the economy in the first 10 years versus in the long term, 30 years. So we are going to present some scenarios to the CAMPO board for that discussion. And then regarding your comment on, you know, the 10, 20, and 30,000-foot level, it does a little bit of both. And I would say that your first 10 years is definitely down closer in the weeds, maybe at the 10,000-foot level. And the farther that you get and the plan, you're at the higher level just because things can change. With regards to technology, we definitely talk about it, and we try and prepare the conversation on the transportation network moving forward encourage that conversation and those discussions to take place. And we use the regional transportation plan as a way to raise that awareness. In the 2040 plan, we did talk about technology, whether it was autonomous vehicles. So we do talk about it. And some of the stuff that's more that staff is unsure of is definitely more probably at the 30,000-foot versus.
Right, and you got to my next question, which is, and Sandra, if you can jump in on this too, are we looking at a proliferation of autonomous vehicles, self-driving vehicles, and should we be planning our transportation system around that, since that seems to be coming down the line?
If Sandra wants to jump in afterwards. You know, staff is definitely monitoring that situation, and it's one of those things that you want to keep an eye on. But when you look at some of the experts, whether it's, you know, Tesla or Toyota, all the experts, a lot of them have different projections on what's going to happen and how the autonomous vehicle is going to kind of come into all the local communities and the regional communities and affect us. So, you know, from a staff perspective, it's one of those things that we keep an eye on, we keep on looking at, but there's definitely not a clear verdict, but we don't want to not talk about it. So we will be talking about it for sure.
Yeah, I'll jump in.
Any other questions? Oh.
You guys hear me?
Yeah, can you speak up, Sandra?
Okay, sure. I'll see if I can get this closer. I would concur with Dirk. It's something that needs to be considered. There's not a whole lot. It's difficult to project right now what technology is going to do. It's changing, you know, every day. In terms of autonomous vehicles, what a lot of the planning community is saying is it doesn't actually change demand that much. The same trips are still going to be occurring, maybe more trips. But the need for people going to certain places or the design of the highway system, things like that, actually don't change that much with autonomous vehicles. The technologies that will probably change what we do more so have to do with shared mobility, micro-mobility, those types of things. So it's all things that you have to consider in these plans, but it's difficult to model any of that. So having good, strong goals that the community supports is probably most important, because then you can adjust the weighting of those goals or how those goals are interpreted every time you update this document. So this document is updated at least every 5 years, a whole new plan. But as you know, this entity does amendments throughout the years too, to change as funding changes or priorities change. But again, having those good solid goals gives you that foundation where you have some consistency, but also that flexibility to adjust as needed. I want to thank you, Dirk, for mentioning the One Nevada plan and that all the MPOs and that are working together. We're also sharing best practices in terms of how we're measuring and scoring those goals. There's going to be some differences, but the more consistent we can all look at how we prioritize for our regions or the state is really important, and we have a great working relationship between the state and the MPOs.
I did have one question for you having to do with the survey. Have you guys developed the survey yet, or are you getting close to it? Or because, you know, these surveys are going to be important in developing the 2050 plan, and I'm just curious, are they going to be, I don't want to say, how deep are we going to go with getting input from the public, I guess, what I'm curious about.
It is a high-level survey, and we can send out the 2040 survey, just to share with the board members. We are close to finalizing the 2050 survey. There are a lot of similar questions. There are a few different questions, but they're quite similar. And the reason why they're similar is because we wanted to help identify trends. If things are changing in the community, if concerns, priorities are changing, it'd be good to know that. And we did see success in 2016 with that survey. We had a good number of participants, so we're definitely we have a target as in the number of folks that we're going to be trying to reach, and we're going to be trying to achieve a higher number. So, but we can share that 2041 tomorrow, and then once we get the 2050 finalized, we'll be sharing that with the board members as well.
Are there specific questions that any of the board members would be interested in getting answers to?
So I think what's more important to me is when I take a survey, so if you just pretend, Lori, are sidewalks important to you? Yes or no?
Yes.
But if you don't ask me the question, is landscaping important to you, and have me actually rank them. So my question to you in the survey, it's the way in which you ask a question. So should I make the road as safe as possible for pedestrians? Yes. Well, does that mean I don't get as many road lanes? Wait a minute. You didn't ask me the question that way. So that I'm interested in the survey to know whether it leads a person to the answer that you're trying to get. And I guess that's what's important to me, is that I see it as a true ranking, or, you know, what's the most important? Here's eight choices, you know, and they would go 1, 2, 3. I find those more telling than just something that leads me to a yes. So I guess that's what I'm interested in, understanding what the public in the Campo area really finds of the highest importance to the lowest importance, if I could say that.
No, that's a great comment, and staff did discuss that. And as we were looking for questions, we made sure to stay away from those absolute questions. So, for example, one of our questions is, hey, here, you have $100. How would you like to allocate your resources? Then we also identified, hey, we asked a question, what are you concerned with, or what kind of priorities do you have? And then we provide a list of options. And then instead of having a yes or no, it's yes, extremely, or slightly type of answer. So that was our goal, to make sure that we understand how folks balance all of it, because as we, as part of staff and as elected officials, the hard part is balancing. And so we designed the survey to help us and guide us into the future with those.
And I think the other thing I look at of concern is that, and it's a more difficult one to get to, is to make sure I got a cross-section of respondents. So if I get 115 responses and all of them came back, yes, I want more bike paths, and I find out, well, that was great, but that's because it came from 115 bike enthusiasts. And so I don't know how you make sure you get a cross-section of the community completing the surveys. So how we get the message out there to, like you said, how do I get from all modes of transportation and everybody that's actually completing the survey would be of interest to me as to how we message that to get more respondents.
A question as well on the survey questions going out on the news survey. How do you decide which questions subjects are pertinent? So, in other words, what I'm trying to get to, not very well, is I don't know that we want to be asking questions where the information that we get back and the answers is not relevant to us. And an example of that would be if we ask a lot of specific questions about the jack operations. Well, a lot of that is dictated by the regulations that we have to follow either at a state or national level. So we don't need to ask a lot of questions about that because that's set in stone. If we ask questions about that, we're setting ourselves up for failure because now we're getting public input and we're pretending that the public's input is going to change things when it's not. So how do we look at these questions and make sure that the answers that we get back are going to be pertinent and usable for us?
The primary goal of the survey and why we're doing it at this early stage of project of plan development really has to do with Supervisor Bagwell's comment or question at the beginning of this item, which was, how do we prioritize projects across the goals? And I would piggyback on that to say, and how does each local jurisdiction prioritize their projects, right? Because CAMPO doesn't implement projects. CAMPO is sort of a warehouse for those three local jurisdictions. So the survey questions really are aimed at understanding the public's priorities for how they would spend money, how they want CAMPO to plan, what's important for CAMPO. And then there are questions in the survey related to demographics, including home zip code, which will help staff analyze that data and provide feedback to the three local jurisdictions on what's important to their specific citizens and residents, as well as we also ask work zip code. So there may be a resident of Dayton that works in Carson, and it still may be important for Carson to understand that person's priorities because they travel on Carson's roads. So it's staff's intent to analyze the data in such a way that we can better inform the project list and bring the results of the survey and the draft project list to CAMPO for that kind of good discussion in June.
Dirk, I have kind of a two-part question. One is, how many respondents did we get with the last survey, and how are we going to deploy the survey?
I want to say, if my memory is correct, we had about 125 folks that responded. And last time we publicized the survey, we used Carson Now, we used Nevada Appeal, we used Facebook, and we'll be doing similar Carson Now, Nevada Appeal, Facebook, and we'll be exploring more options. But our goal is to get we send it out to staff too. So Douglas County staff, Lyon County, Carson City staff. If we have businesses that we've been working with or that we know, we send it out, and we really tap all of our resources to try and send it out. Definitely, absolutely.
Even at 150, that's a pretty low sample.
It's a very low sample.
It is low, and a good example that I have is Washington, D.C. was working on their regional transportation plan, and they had 300 people to show up. And so it's when you compare Carson City to a metropolitan area of that size, you don't get everybody, but we definitely try and pass it out. And we try and make the survey short and sweet so folks it's not too encumbering on folks.
Is there a way for us to capture the people that have signed up through Carson Connect so that we can use that database to send out the survey to?
That's a great idea. We do have that database.
Okay. That's a great idea, Brad. Those are engaged people that are already using a city resource to report issues. So they probably would love to work on a survey. Good suggestion. And I'll send it out everywhere, too, if you send me the link.
So here's a chance. Anybody call in, have a question for Dirk?
This is Sandra. I was just going to add, yeah, I think all of us can help promote the survey through various different channels. We try and encourage everyone to fill out surveys for all of our MPOs as well as us. And it's tough to get responses, but it's, I think, up to all of us to help get as many responses as we can.
All right, anybody else?
Hey, Greg, this is Mark.
Yep.
Hey, I just want to chime in about the complete streets commitment that we need to keep in the background at all times and the safety. And there's a history of when you build these the highways with more lanes, there's actually more accidents and higher speeds. So a lot of times now the traffic is seeing narrowed lanes, left lanes, and bicycle pedestrian facilities, and it slows people down and it makes the whole community safer. So I don't want to lose that. And then I want to tell you that I was involved with a couple of surveys in Reno from the Truckee Meadows Regional Planning Agency, and there was a software company that had a survey that was more interactive and has better responses, that I thought maybe you guys could at least call them and look at that before you send the survey out and see if you might think of the method they use with that was very successful, gathering people with comments because it was interactive and people felt more involved with the process. So just my comments. Thank you.
Oh, Mark, how long have you been on the phone?
All night.
Oh, okay.
Since it began, I said I was here, but she moved on to the next name pretty fast.
Right. Well, this, no.
Since the beginning of the meeting?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so since we have no public, any other comments on this item? It's information only.
Sorry, this is Sandra again. Just one more thing. Back to the conversation about the goals and concerns about how those weigh against each other. I know our process, what we're trying to work through, is not necessarily prioritize one over the other, but look for those suite of projects that help all of those goals. And also that this survey is to help identify those goals for this update. The ones that Dirk mentioned were the goals for the 2040 plan. I wouldn't anticipate they change a whole lot, but this next month is the opportunity for the public to weigh in on any changes to those goals for the update. So I wanted to make sure that was clear.
Okay, thank you. I guess at this point we'll move on to item 6D. This is discussion and possible action regarding two transportation alternatives program TAP grant applications to the Nevada Department of Transportation for discretionary grant funding for the Carson City Multi-Use Path Rehabilitation and Connection Infrastructure Project for approximately $1.64 million and for the Western Nevada Safe Routes to Schools non-infrastructure project for approximately $885,925 and authorizing the CAMPO chair to sign a letter in support of the grant applications. Lucia.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Lucia Maloney, Transportation Manager. Carson City RTC staff are preparing two grant applications for this year's Transportation Alternative Program funding cycle to be submitted to NDOT by May 1st. The two projects are the Carson City Multi-Use Path Rehabilitation and Connection Infrastructure Project, as well as the Western Nevada State Francis School Non-Infrastructure Project. The infrastructure project is to construct the linear ditch multi-use path extension from Roop Street to South Carson Street and to provide rehabilitation comprehensively to Carson City's multi-use path network. The second grant application for the non-infrastructure is requesting to continue the Western Nevada Safe Routes to School program with a 5% in-kind local match. The current Western Nevada Safe Routes to School program is funded through September 30th, 2020. There is no fiscal impact of this item, but staff are requesting that CAMPO support the grant applications and authorize the vice chair to sign a letter of support tonight for those applications. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
This is Chaz. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, Lucia, I have a question. This extends the path from Roop Street sort of south to Evelyn and then west to South Carson Street, which I think is great, but a more used connection, currently anyway, is down South Roop Street and then turning onto the path to head east. And as we know, that particular bend is really hazardous. I would strongly encourage the staff look into extending the path north to Little Lane on the east side of Roop Street, because a lot of bike traffic and some pedestrian traffic uses, well, pedestrians are easy because they can cross to the east side of Roop Street at the light at Little Lane, and then they can go down the sidewalk. But bike traffic has to make that hazardous crossing, and if they could get on the path at Little Lane, they would not have to make that hazardous crossing. So that was one comment. And then the other comment I have is, what sort of crossing is proposed at Evelyn Drive of Roop Street? I'm hoping it's a rapid flashing beacon that's PED activated, because crossing there is going to be hazardous also. That's my comment.
Thank you, Chaz. Those are great comments. The connection across Roop through the south side of the DMV lot has been a project that's been requested by CAMPO board members and others, I think, for years. So that's why that alignment was selected by staff for this project. We are aware, though, of the needs for additional network connectivity where Stewart hits Fifth Street and where Roop hits Fifth Street and across at Little. And so we're not forgetting about that. That's just, this was the alignment that has been kind of first in the queue. That said, the crossing at Evelyn is something that our engineering staff are still looking at. The project hasn't been designed yet because the project is yet unfunded, but that's being worked through as part of the grant application. Your comment on an RRFB is well received, and it very well may be included in the application.
To follow up then, you have a grant number, $1.64 million, so you must have done some enough design to come up with that number, surely.
Yes, that's correct. I would add that staff are still finalizing the grant application. We still have about 3 weeks until the applications are due. And so those numbers are approximate. The budget estimates are approximate at this time.
Are there any other questions?
So my question is in the match. So we have the money right now that's in the bank. It's not money that we're looking for receipts to be coming in, because I think we're going to see fewer dollars in all budget areas over this next thing. So before I feel comfortable authorizing it. It's cash we actually have in the bank right now for projects. It's not, we're not going to have to be scaling down because we don't actually have the revenues.
So this agenda item is just the letter of support. The RTC item later tonight will discuss a little bit more of the match. The match, if approved by NDOT, staff would bring the item back for acceptance of the grant to RTC, who would accept that grant award and budget the match at that time. It's anticipated that that match would be budgeted out of the federal fiscal or the fiscal year 21 budget. So it's not in the bank currently. It would have to be budgeted in that future fiscal year.
I really just give the question for consideration, because even though it's just CAMPO supporting a letter, is I don't want to be going after grants or submitting grants if I don't really believe I have the wherewithal to accept it. Because it's a lot of work for committees to do to award grants and contracts. And so I'm more or less looking for, these are small ones. I was seeing that $82,000. And the other one I was very comfortable with because it's in kind. So I don't have a problem with that one. But this one's, you're saying, is only $82,000?
That's correct. This grant is fantastic in that it's a 95-5 okay. match. And considering that the Carson City multi-use path network, the separated path network, we had anticipated several years ago using the recreational trails program to help us support maintenance and ongoing maintenance of our multi-use paths. That program has essentially dried up. They're no longer awarding, it seems, to public agencies. So the last round, Public Works didn't even apply. So this project specifically is looking to rehab all of those paths, and staff feel that on the list of priorities with deferred maintenance, if we could cover it all at once, be very efficient with this small local match, it would be up there to use some of our fiscal year 21 money on that.
Okay. Thank you.
I would guess that on a 95% grant that we're always going to prioritize that type of revenue so that we can leverage it, and we're always going to end up budgeting that money. That would be my guess. I can't imagine that we would turn down 95% money.
Any other questions? Not seeing any. Call for the public comment. There's no public, so I'll bring it back. Do I have a motion?
Sure. I move to support the grant applications and to authorize the vice chair to sign a letter of support as presented.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those not in favor say nay. Motion carries. Item 7, board comments. No comments here. Chaz?
No comments.
Sandra?
Thank you for making accommodations during this unusual time. We're working through all of this, you know, working from home and virtual connectivity. It's nice to see you all remotely. And I was just going to mention that in line with the RTP update, we're working on our One Nevada implementation. Our overall plan set the foundation and framework, and we're really kind of getting into the details of things like prioritization and weighting. And so we're working pretty heavily on that right now, and hoping to use a more robust process for our DIP update later this year. And I'd be happy to have someone come give a presentation maybe in the next few months, preferably when we're all back together. But I think the alignment of the MPOs and the state DOT is something to be really proud of in Nevada, and so we'd be happy to share what we're doing and how that aligns with what CAMPO is doing. So thank you.
Mark, you have anything?
Nope, thank you.
John? Yeah, I was getting to Bob. Bob, you have anything?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you.
All right, so the next meeting of CAMPO is tentatively scheduled for 4:30 on Wednesday, May 13th, 2020, in the CR room right here. I imagine that as we make our way through the COVID-19 thing, then we'll figure out if we're going to do this again next month or not. And I'll just go for a public comment one last time. And we have no public. So item 10, adjournment. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you.
To the RTC members, unless somebody requests a break, my preference would be to move right into the meeting.
Fine with me.
Okay.